Hello, I'm Christine Milks. This is number 0463, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0463. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Susan Shumsky, author of Maharishi and Me. She talks about the Beatles movie Yellow Submarine, which is now celebrating its 50th anniversary.
I knew Maharishi very, very well. I spent 22 years in his ashram and 6 years on his personal staff. So I really understand the philosophy that Maharishi was putting forth, was teaching, and how he influenced, very deeply influenced, the Beatles and their music. Definitely.
Barbecue guru Ron Shuchuk talks about the best in regional open flame cooking.
I learned about Southern style barbecue, which is really one of America's greatest gifts to the world, about 30 years ago, and spent a lot of my barbecue career just trying to perfect how to cook that. And of course, there are all kinds of different regional styles within the U.S., but I have this craving to understand what makes great regional barbecue, and I think that we as a country, after kind of being exposed to real Southern style barbecue for several decades now, we're in a place where we can start thinking about what makes Canadian regional barbecue.
Former NYPD officer Scott Baker, star and executive producer of the streaming cop comedy Midtown. Do current real cops enjoy the humor?
They do see the humor, and at least from what I've seen or heard from them. But, you know, in all honesty, no offense to cops. A lot of cops aren't the brightest bulb. I mean, a lot of them just, you know, if they weren't cops, there's nothing else they could do in life, some of them. You know, I mean, it's the God's honest truth. The majority of cops get up every day or take the test and do it because, like myself, it's inherent in you to want to help, to want to do the good thing. But, you know, there are some cops out there, you stare at them, and you're like, what are you thinking? This guy, listen, put away the gun. Tomorrow we're going to start slow. We're going to start with chasing colors, guys. Okay? Just relax.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later. The person who told you this was show number 0463 was Christine Milks, who is a mayoralty candidate for the November election in Gananoque, Ontario. As you know, it's local politics that affect the most people. It's also said that politics at all levels has become too toxic, tribal, and personality driven. But I believe that course corrections are in play and civility can and will return. And I believe that Christine is that kind of candidate to help turn things around. I've known her for years, since my Brockville, Ontario days, and she is a shining beacon of smarts and civility. She's eminently qualified for the job, and her charm, wit, and compassionate nature will guide her as it always has. Thank you very much, Christine, for doing the guest late on this edition of the Stuff File program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make the show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Yes. You know, if you're dating the daughter of a plumber or an accountant or an insurance salesman, you don't have to worry too much about her father's approval. He may not like you, but what is he going to do about it? But if your girlfriend's father is a police officer, you might have to make an extra effort to make a good impression, because if you don't, something like this might happen to you. According to police in Ohio, Officer John Kovach did not like his daughter's boyfriend, Makai Coleman. Kovach tracked the computer of his 18-year-old daughter, Caitlin, to a friend's home and drove to the area. There, he spotted his daughter's boyfriend in a car with a female passenger in the front seat. What he did not realize was that his daughter was also in the car in the back seat. The officer threatened to take Coleman to jail without giving a reason as to why that should happen. He then ordered the man to get into his patrol car. When Kovach threatened to issue a fine to the front passenger for not wearing a seatbelt, the girl's mother confronted the officer. She accused him of lying about the seatbelt and threatened to call 911. The woman told Officer Kovach that maybe his daughter was the one not wearing a seatbelt. That was when Kovach realized his daughter was in the car, and he ordered her to get out of the vehicle. She confronted her father about him using his badge and uniform to intimidate her and her friends. Kovach ordered his daughter to get into the patrol car so he could take her home, but she refused. The officer's camera recorded his daughter saying that he couldn't take her home because she was 18. As she was seen getting into the car, Caitlin was then heard screaming, "Daddy, why are you pushing me? Why are you doing this?" The daughter allegedly reported the incident to police. An internal investigation by the Lorain Police Department discovered that the traffic stop was not justified and that it violated the department's rules of conduct throughout the incident. As a result, the 26-year veteran police officer was fired from his job. Kovach is now appealing his dismissal. You know, I'm guessing the boyfriend isn't dropping by the house to pick up his girlfriend or staying over for dinner. I'm also guessing that Dad is spending his days off cleaning his gun. For Coleman, this is either true love or a death wish. The State Bank of India had one of its 50,000 ATMs quit working for several days. When technicians finally went to check on the machine in Tinsukia, they opened it up to find about 1.2 million rupees, that's about 17,600 US dollars, out of the 2.9 million rupees inside were shredded. The culprit was quickly located. There was also a dead rat inside the machine. "We have started an investigation into this rare incident," said branch manager Chandan Sharma, "and we'll take measures to prevent its reoccurrence." Well, you could always install a cat inside, and if the cat shreds the money, add the optional canine enhancement plug-in. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, a Polish environmental group that was using a mobile phone transmitter to track migratory movements of a stork has received a phone bill for the equivalent of $2,650 US after the bird went missing in Sudan and someone started using the chip to make calls. Like many other storks who nest in Poland in the summer, Kajtek, that's the name of the bird, an adult stork, began his southward migration to Africa in August of 2017. Thanks to a SIM chip transmitter, the ecological group was able to track his GPS movements and post details about the journey online. The bird's last signal came from Sudan on April 26th, but later the group heard about some 20 hours of calls that had been made using the SIM card in Sudan. Irenius Kaluga, the association's head, said that Kajtek probably isn't alive. You know, I'll bet many of those calls were someone searching for decent recipes for stork. And by the way, their drumsticks aren't really anything to write home about. Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Is, of course, a little bit of the title track of Yellow Submarine by the Beatles. You know, on July 8th, there will be worldwide screenings to mark the 50th anniversary of the animated film Yellow Submarine. The avant-garde, surrealistic, artistic masterpiece is as fresh and relevant today as it was when it was released back in 1968. Beatles author Susan Shumsky is on to talk about the film. She has some insight into the making of the movie. Susan also spent 22 years in the ashrams and 6 years on the personal staff of Beatles guru Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, and she's the author of her memoir, Maharishi and Me. She joins us on the line right now from Nevada. Hi, Susan.
Hi, Peter. I'm so glad to be here with you today.
Thanks for being on the program with us. I understand you just watched it yourself to catch up with the movie. Does it hold up after all these years?
Oh my gosh, it holds up so well. Here we are 50 years later, and the theme of the movie, the look of the movie, is entirely fresh and new. it is so today. I would say that this film is timeless. There's nothing about it that looks or feels dated at all. And the message of the film is as relevant today as ever. So I was just thrilled to watch this film. I love it.
Now, you actually never met the Beatles yourself, but as you mentioned, you were connected to Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, so you kind of knew them through him, right?
Well, yes, you could say that, because I knew Maharishi very, very well. I spent 22 years in his ashram and 6 years on his personal staff. So I really understand the philosophy that Maharishi was putting forth, was teaching, and how he influenced the Beatles and their music, definitely.
Knowing the man as well as you do, when you watch the movie, do you really see his imprint in their work?
Absolutely. I see his imprint in their songs, in the lyrics of their songs, and their philosophy. The film itself was not written by the Beatles, however. It was written by Lee Minoff, and then the art director was Heinz Edelman, and those were the two main creators of this film. The Beatles really had nothing to do with the film other than writing the songs, obviously, that are in the film. But the screenplay, the book and the screenplay are based upon those songs, and the songs really put forth Maharishi's philosophy, the entire philosophy of the 60s, in fact, which started with the psychedelic era, and then the Beatles then went on to really explore spirituality with Maharishi Mahesh Yogi.
You mentioned the fact that the Beatles weren't really heavily involved in the movie. As a matter of fact, I'm sure some people would be surprised to know that, you know, they contributed 4 unpublished songs, among others, for the film. They didn't even voice their own characters, but I understand they kind of regretted not being more involved.
Well, once they saw how magnificent the film came out, they truly regretted that they were not part of it, that they hadn't voiced their own characters. So at least they showed up at the very end of the film. They appeared at the end of the film for about 1 minute. And, you know, that was it. They had nothing to do with the film. But, you know, the film was so artfully made that you wouldn't know that, because the characters just spoke exactly as the Beatles would speak. The jokes in the film were exactly the kind of Liverpudlian kind of humor that the Beatles would use. In fact, there were Liverpudlian actors that played their characters, and also Liverpudlian that wrote the humorous part of the film that included that kind of humor. So, in fact, the Beatles were very well represented in the film.
When you watch the movie, and again, you didn't meet the Beatles, but you can understand their spirituality. Of the four, who would you say was the most spiritual?
You know, that's a really interesting question, because Maharishi believed that, in fact, he said that Ringo was the best meditator because he went just completely by heart and he was so innocent. But he said that George was the most advanced and that this was his last life. In other words, he was the most spiritually advanced. So it's an interesting question that you ask. And I think that Ringo and George were both the most, very spiritually inclined.
There is a lot of symbolism in this movie, and I'm sure it's an animated film, so kids got to see it. I'm sure there's a lot of stuff that went over the heads of kids and even the heads of adults. But someone like yourself, who has worked a long time with Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, tell us a little bit about some of the symbolism that is in this movie that might have slipped past a few people.
Yes. So Pepperland, which is the land that this film takes place in, was an unearthly paradise that was 80,000 leagues beneath the sea. So it was beneath the subconscious mind. It was the field of paradise within, which is the field of pure consciousness, our higher self, the place within us. that is truly connected to our divine nature. So Pepperland is paradise. It is the end-all be-all experience of humanity. And it's filled with positivism. It's filled with these words, big words. They're like monuments within this paradise. Words like love, yes, okay, and the word no, K-N-O-W, which was clipped to N-O by the blue meanies, which the blue meanies are representing negativism. So we have negativism against positivism in this film. The blue meanies are trying to overcome anything that's positive. And the blue meanies and Eleanor Rigby, all the lonely people that show up in the film, who are, they're literally blue. They have the blues. They're devoid of love. They're harboring a negative attitude. And John Lennon's sign of the horn is also a symbol in the film, but it's not a demonic sign as people might think. It's quite the opposite. In fact, it's an ancient Buddhist gesture that expels negative energies. And there's another important symbol in the film, which is the Maya temple, and the yellow submarine represents the sun, and it's perched atop the Maya pyramid. And this is really the same image that we find on the reverse side of the United States $1 bill, which represents the Eye of Providence, which is also the third eye or eye of illumination, the seat of our sixth sense. So these are some of the, there's so many symbols in the film. These are just some of them.
Now, the 50th anniversary screenings are taking place on July the 8th, so I'm sure it'll find a whole new audience of those who weren't around when the movie was made 50 years ago. But I'm curious to know if you think that of those who have seen the movie before, probably as young children or teenagers, if they'll look at it differently seeing it today through older, more mature eyes.
Well, yeah, I would think so. I would imagine that those of us who were around in 1968 who saw the film, I mean, I certainly didn't get all that symbolism out of it when I first saw it, even though I was already an adult at that time. But certainly those who were kids at the time, they're going to get a whole lot more out of the film. And they're also going to really get the humor. There's so much humor in this film. It's really quite hilarious. And there's a lot of very subtle jokes in the film that are for adults. It's actually almost more like an adult film in a way. But a lot of animated films are like that. They appeal not only to kids, but also adults, because there is adult humor in just about any animated film.
You said earlier when we first started talking that the film does certainly hold up 50 years later. But also in this tumultuous time that we live in, do you think the film is even more important now than it was when it came out 50 years ago?
I think it's a universal theme. The idea that all you need is love, the idea that the love is shining within you and all around you. The basic theme of the film is love being the cohesive force that can overcome all negativity and can create world harmony. Because love is what overcomes the blue meanies in the film. You know, they're not killed by weapons or anything. They're really, it's flower power that is is overcoming the blue meanies. And the main songs in the film, All You Need Is Love. And the other other main song, which is It's All Too Much, express the idea of love overcoming negativism. And at the end of the film, the nowhere man called Jeremy Hillary Boob, he overcomes the blue meanie with flower power. And then John invites the blue people to come and hook up and otherwise commingle and join us. And then Boob says, ah, yes, is a word with a glorious ring, a true universal euphonious thing. Engenders embracing and chasing of blues, the very best word for the whole world to use. And then the Blue Meanie says, yes, let us mix, Max. I never admitted it before, but my cousin is the bluebird of happiness. And then at the very end, the song It's All Too Much plays. And that's all about the love light that's shining within us and all around us. And that song was written by George Harrison. So it's a very spiritual song. And he says in the song, your love is, when I look into your eyes, your love is there for me. And the more I go inside, the more there is to see. It's all too much for me to take the love that's shining all around you. So the meaning of that song is that love is within us. And the more we go within, the more we see the truth. In other words, through meditation, through experiencing who we really are, we realize the self and we realize our true nature, which is pure love.
And we'll end it on that. The movie, of course, is The Yellow Submarine, which is now celebrating its 50th anniversary. Your book is called Maharishi and Me, and people can also go to your website, which is drsusan.org. That's drsusan.org, correct?
Yes, that's it.
Thank you very much for being on the program with us, Susan.
Well, thank you, Peter. I really enjoyed speaking about the movie Yellow Submarine.
Susan Shumsky, author of Maharishi and Me. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0463, and you'll find links to Susan's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like, but the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. You're listening to The Stuff File, now with 25% fewer calories. Here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about open fire cooking. Plus, we'll meet the star and executive producer of the cop comedy Midtown. Plus, we also have an idiot of the day coming your way, so stick around for that. And lots more Stuff File news here on a program that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, RCMP officers in Surrey, BC responded to a report that a speeding car had crashed. When they arrived, they found that the car had come to a T intersection but didn't turn and instead crashed through some bushes and rolled over. The driver and passenger were killed, the car was stolen, and both men were known to police for their criminality, the RCMP said. The car came to rest on the grounds of Hazelmere Cemetery. I believe the word you're looking for is karma. And a sheriff's deputy spotted a pickup truck in the Florida Keys and knew the owner, Darrell Rydell, had a suspended driver's license, plus three prior DUI convictions and another case pending. He pulled the truck over, but according to the resulting arrest report, as soon as the deputy got out of his car, Rydell took off. The deputy pursued the vehicle for 2 miles before Rydell finally pulled over, then got out of his truck with a can of beer in his hand, which he chugged down. He told the deputy he fled because he was scared, and when asked why he was driving with a suspended license, he said, "Because I still have to work." Well, I'm going out on a limb to say that he probably doesn't have to work anymore. In Auckland, New Zealand, an unnamed 28-year-old man appeared in court June 18th to answer charges of stealing two human toes from the Body World's Vital Exhibition, a traveling display that features human corpses and organs preserved through plastination. The toes, valued at $5,500 each, have been returned to the exhibition. The toe thief is looking at 7 years in prison and 2 years for interfering with a dead body. Yeah, but is it really just a dead body when it's on exhibit and after the preserving process of plastination? Isn't the act of plastination interfering with a dead body? Just asking. Also, did anybody check to see if this guy had any other body parts that weren't his own at his home? I just get the image that he was home alone playing Yahtzee using toes for dice. Yeah. In Youngstown, Ohio, police responded to a call about multiple gunshots on June 10th, and they spotted 21-year-old Darion Mitchell speeding away from the scene in an SUV. He refused to pull over, but finally left the vehicle and ran into a home where he climbed through a window and hung from the ledge. Mitchell tried to climb back in, but lost his grip and fell directly into the arms of the officers below, who handcuffed him. You know, it's rare when the perp just literally lands in your lap. I don't know, maybe Mitchell is afraid of heights. Perhaps in jail they should make him watch the film Vertigo on a loop.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
This is an important self-serving promotional bulletin. My book, Great Conversations, My Interviews with Two Men on the Moon and a Galaxy of Stars, is still available. And like the title says, within the pages you'll find some of my celebrity encounters with Oscar winners like Carl Malden, Cloris Leachman, and Christopher Plummer. Emmy winners like Ed Asner, Michael Moriarty, and Lindsay Wagner. Tony winners like Carol Channing and Julie Newmar. A host of TV icons, plus two guys who left their footprints on the moon. Order it now. It's available in hardcover, softcover, and for your e-reader on Amazon.com and Amazon.ca, as well as at my publisher's website at BearManorMedia.com. All links are on our website at TheStuffFile.com. So, buy the book. What are you waiting for? This has been an important self-serving promotional bulletin.
I love you. Now, back to our show.
A fire department crew in Dunedin, New Zealand, was called to a familiar address, their own. Smoke was pouring from a window in the fire station, but it turned out that the station was not on fire. The smoke was coming from the oven, probably the result of a common cause of house fires, leaving and forgetting something that was cooking on the stove. On the bright side, the Fire and Emergency New Zealand spokeswoman, Lynn Crossan, said, "Our response time was exceptional." Well, if you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen. You know, in an unrelated situation, that old adage also seems to work for White House staffers in restaurants, but I digress. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, here's a story from right here in my own backyard. Every demonstrator who showed up on May 30th at Marché Central in Montreal wore a pink shirt, a dark jacket, and khaki pants. And she didn't look very happy. 36,000 people had expressed interest in a protest against the high price of gasoline. 5,000 said they were going to go. One, count 'em, one showed up. She had a sign attached to her windshield, and she was not impressed at the lack of response. The lone protester was outnumbered by the six cops sent for crowd control. And she wasn't even the organizer. That's right, the organizers didn't show up. Gee, I bet she feels bad now that she, you know, wasted gas to get to that protest. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? It's been a couple of years since we talked to Ron Shuchuk. He's a barbecuing guru. Back on my old radio show, we had him on the air talking about grilling and his book, Barbecue Secrets Deluxe, The Very Best Recipes, Tips, and Tricks from a Barbecue Champion, is still one of my prized possessions. Ron is back on the show to talk about something slightly different, live fire cooking and also regional barbecuing. He joins us on the line right now via Skype from Vancouver. Hi, Ron.
Hey, Peter Anthony. Thanks for having me again.
Thanks for being on the program with us. Like I said, it's been a couple of years. As I said in the introduction, your book is still one of my favorites. I am holding it in my hot little hands right now.
Well, thanks for your kind words. It has gotten a great response. It's almost out of print now. It's been quite a while since it was published, but I'm very proud of that book, and I think I made a tiny little contribution to what is Canadian barbecue.
Well, let's talk about that and also regional barbecuing in general, because, you know, we have an audience that is goes beyond our shores, and you've checked on other places in the world when it comes to regional cooking. So first of all, tell us a little bit about what led you to this in the first place. What were you curious about when it came to regional cooking, not just in Canada, but beyond?
Well, I learned about Southern style barbecue, which is really fantastic. It's really one of America's greatest gifts to the world, about 30 years ago, and spent a lot of my barbecue career just trying to perfect how to cook that. And of course, there are all kinds of different regional styles within the U.S., but I have this craving to understand what makes great regional barbecue. And I think that we as a country, after kind of being exposed to real Southern style barbecue for several decades now, we're in a place where we can start thinking about what makes Canadian regional barbecue. And so the first spot I think about is Central Texas. Have you ever been to Central Texas?
No, I haven't, but I've heard a lot about their barbecuing skills.
Well, there's where you have a barbecue tradition that goes back over 100 years, you know, where you had German and Czech immigrants coming into Texas in the 1800s and bringing with them their butchers and their deli guys and smoking sausages and so on. And they, back then, learned how to smoke big whole beef shoulders and beef brisket today that's smoked with something called post oak is really defined Central Texas barbecue. And it's, I equate it to like the equivalent of the Champagne region is to wine, Central Texas is to barbecue. And they cook it, they've cooked it the same way for generations. And it is so entrenched and so tradition, the traditions hold so strong that they reluctantly added barbecue sauce to some of the menus in like the 80s because of pressure from, you know, like people who are saying, why don't you have barbecue sauce? But Central Texas is, there's a lot of purism, but I found in my visits there that there are some people that are taking that tradition and tweaking it and bringing it into the new generation. There's some folks like Franklin Barbecue in Austin, where he's, you know, doing little tweaks, adding coffee to his barbecue sauce and doing some and offering pork on the menu, which is kind of a bit of a taboo almost in some parts of Texas. And then I discovered this place in San Antonio, the Granary restaurant, where the chef there in the Pearl District of San Antonio, where the guy is taking traditions and twisting them. He makes like a brisket ramen where he's got ramen noodles made with the craft beer, a slice of brisket instead of whatever would go into ramen. And instead of the nori or seaweed, he's got a piece of freeze-dried collard green in there and kind of twisting and turning, taking barbecue and bringing it into this weird and super interesting and delicious fusion thing. So you've got that as a model where you've got longstanding traditions that are evolving. And then you've got these country like Canada, or I have had a chance to go down to Costa Rica in recent years and work with the folks down there who are in their early stages. They're kind of where Canada was maybe 20, 25 years ago in terms of learning about traditional Southern style barbecue and starting to compete in the world championships and bringing, you know, Costa Ricans to learn that great style of cooking. But then they have this opportunity to define, well, what is Costa Rican barbecue? Because right now, when people go and grill something, it's so rudimentary that you wouldn't even call it a style, just throwing a piece of meat or fish on a grill. Although there's nothing wrong with that. I was just recently in Portugal. And if you talk about pure traditional regional barbecue, the way that Portuguese people cook fish over charcoal is hard to beat. It's kind of amazing.
You know, you bring that up, and I think back exactly 30 years ago, when I was doing a travel program and I went going through the Caribbean, I went to St. Lucia, and they have a community called Grosile. And every Friday night, they have sort of street fairs where people come out and they cook food on the streets, and they cook in huge, giant oil drums.
Oh, yeah.
And
fantastic.
One of the things that when you just mentioned the fish is I'm not a fish person at all, but they had kingfish in hops bread that they would fry up on the grill. And and speaking as someone who is not a fish eater, I cannot remember the last time I had something that delicious.
Yeah, I mean, and because it's so fresh, and so and they cook it in such a clean way, right? So you have that as a model, and you have Central Texas barbecue. Well, what is Canadian barbecue? And that's where the conversation goes with me, is I've been pursuing this, trying to figure out, is there a Canadian style? Now, what do you think, Peter Anthony? Is there a Canadian style of barbecue?
Well, you mentioned Texas, and I would assume, I'm just guessing now on my part, that in places where cattle ranches are big, just like in Texas, I would assume that the West Coast, or at least Alberta, would be a place where barbecue would be very, very strong. And maybe other places where there's a strong indigenous community. Would that be accurate?
I think that's true. I think first of all, Alberta is a hotbed of barbecue, but I would say generally speaking, it's more centered on the traditional American style of cooking it. But you really hit on something when you said Aboriginal communities, because on the West Coast, the First Nations peoples have been cooking over live fire for thousands of years. And I've got some friends in that community. For my book, I did some research. I wrote a book called Planking Secrets and went and visited with the Cowichan people on Vancouver Island and watched them cook salmon over an alder fire. And it's fantastic. And then and more recently, I was able to actually get a full demonstration and was cooked salmon, prepared salmon in the traditional way where they butterfly it using these things called PK sticks, where the salmon is kind of butterflied. It looks like a sail almost. And it's leaned over the alder fire and turned on this stick, and not much of a treatment to it. They actually, nowadays they use some soy sauce and brown sugar. But if there is if there's something that defines Canadian barbecue, I would say that it is salmon cooked over an alder fire or planked on an alder plank. Wow. That, to me, the flavor of that, like you talked about in St. Lucia, that purity of flavor. I don't know if I've ever tasted better salmon than that. Just leaned over that alder fire in an outdoor setting.
Wow. My mouth is watering now talking about it.
It is mouthwatering, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Absolutely.
Now, if you're going to talk about, you know, the equivalent of taking these traditions and then turning them in a way that is super chefy and avant-garde, if you will, there's a guy who's an acquaintance of mine named Rob Belcham, who's one of the leading chefs here on the West Coast. He has a restaurant called Campagnolo, among other things. And Rob and I have a healthy competition every year at the, among other chefs, at this thing called Brewery and the Beast here in Vancouver, where local chefs cook local meats and they kind of try to one up one another. And one year, Rob was cooking whole pigs that had been butterflied over a charcoal fire and letting the drippings go into some Roma tomatoes and making a salsa and serving it with that. That was pretty cool. The following year, like, I was kind of totally one upped by that, because I just cooked pork chops. The following year, I thought, do something truly regional, and I'm going to show him. So I built an authentic Jamaican-style jerk pit, and instead of using pimento wood like they use in Jamaica, I used alder, and I cooked whole locally raised pork bellies in this jerk pit, and it was amazing. And I thought, oh, well, okay, I won this year. And I get to the grounds of this event, and there's Rob Belcham, and he is you won't believe this, Peter Anthony, this is absolutely true. He's got a 300-pound sturgeon on a spit.
Wow.
Wired this sturgeon to a spit, and he's got the sturgeon from a place in the Sunshine Coast that actually raises sturgeon and uses them for caviar. They can actually farm the caviar without killing the sturgeon, but every once in a while they have to give up a sturgeon. So he had this sturgeon from there on this spit, but get this, over a charcoal fire, and then he's got these long metal poles that are kind of curved, so they curve over top of the sturgeon, and latched onto those, he's got three giant West Coast octopi, whose heads have been stuffed with pork chorizo, and their tentacles, so the heat is going to melt the chorizo inside the octopus's head, drain down along the octopus's tentacles, and the tentacles are actually basting the sturgeon as it's rotating around on this spit. And okay, well, you know, you win. And it was delicious, but that is cool, and that's Canadian barbecue too.
And on that note, we got to cut it there because we're just about out of time. But the one thing I wanted to have you on the program because for some people, this time of the year is the beginning of barbecue season. For me, barbecue season's all year round.
Me too.
I digress. But it's always a pleasure to hear from you, because just hearing what you say is inspirational to others. So I thank you very much, Ron, for being on the program with us once again.
Well, thanks a lot. And hello to all your audience. Have a great Canada Day, or I hope you had a good Canada Day. And keep on grilling.
Barbecue expert Ron Shuchuk, author of Barbecue Secrets Deluxe, the very best recipes, tips, and tricks from a barbecue champion. You can still find his book available on Amazon. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0463, and you'll find links to Ron's site, plus also links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob Garrigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. As Americans celebrate Independence Day, it's important to remember the individuals who laid the foundation for the freedoms we enjoy today. One of the most influential reformers of 1776 was Thomas Paine. He wrote a pamphlet called Common Sense, and it ignited public support for the idea of challenging the autocratic rule of the King of England. Today, the spirit of Thomas Paine's call to freedom is kept alive by organizations like the Center for America. By sparking public debate about how excessive government intrusion in our lives robs us of the freedoms enjoyed by previous generations, the hope is to lay the foundation for prosperity and greater liberty. Let's be fair. The autocrats of today don't wear white wigs, but they often wear judicial robes or badges that grant them access to powerful government offices. So this week, we pause to remind ourselves that America is a nation ruled by law, not by the whims of men or women. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamericatv.org.
Coming to you from the outskirts of sanity, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to Scott Baker, who is the star and co-executive producer of the online cop comedy Midtown, now going into its second season. We'll also have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on, but I've got one more Stuff File news story that I want to share with you right here, right now, on a program that is also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, a homeowner was called by the Miami-Dade, Florida police to tell him his home had been burgled. Neighbors saw two men go inside and only one come out. Officers found a broken window but decided not to bother to go in. When the homeowner, who asked not to be identified, arrived home, he went in to find a complete mess. And, he says, he heard a noise as the second burglar fled the scene. Police came and took a second report but didn't come a third time when the homeowner called to say he found one of the burglars had left behind his cell phone and his pants, complete with a wallet. Only when the TV news station reported on the case did police come and retrieve the solid clues in the case. Yeah. You know, when it comes to police work, taking a too-bad-for-you report, that's easy. Actually having to track down leads, that's time-consuming. Gotta love Florida's Keystone Cops. By the way, we spell that with two Ks. Just saying. And while we're on the topic of cops and humor, let's just get to our last guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Scott Baker is a former NYPD officer who has written several books. We spoke to him a few years ago when his book, A Warmer Shade of Blue, came out. Well, since then, Scott has been working on a television series called Midtown. Season 2 is coming out in July, and they're getting ready to start shooting Season 3. Scott joins us on the line right now from California. Hi, Scott.
Hey, Peter. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being back on the program with us, and congratulations with Midtown. I got to mention to you that I saw the trailer for the series, and I truly laughed out loud.
Thanks. I appreciate it. We really tried to make it, I would say, to the common folk. You know what I mean? What I mean by that is I don't mean, you know, people are common folk. I mean, but so that everybody can relate to, like, things that people would talk about in their office, things like that.
Now, for those who may not have heard you when you're on the show before, and we've talked to you not only here on this program, but on my old radio show as well. As I said in the introduction, you were a former NYPD officer. You wrote some very funny books, and now you're doing this television show. What is the reaction, especially now with the show now going into its second season, what is the reaction that you get from either former colleagues who you worked with in the NYPD or cops in general?
Well, it's really kind of funny because I'm dating a girl now for about 5 years. So we're, you know, really, you know, we're together. I mean, that's, you know, it's just, it's, you know, serious, whatever. But I tease her a lot. She got a great sense of humor. So whenever we go to a place, every once in a while, when I do my live stage performance, if we stay, if it's a resort, someone will come up to me and they'll say, oh, I loved your show last night. Thank you so much. Because we bring people up on stage for the live stage resort. So to kid around with her, I put on a fake English accent. I go, look, baby, this is work for me. I'm really sorry if people come up to me, you know, and they just, you know, interrupt us. I'm trying to have fun with you, baby. You know, this is work for me. So we're at a party, at a Christmas party, and the guy is staring at me, and I'm like, I don't know, maybe I know him from the gym or something like that. I don't know. He comes up to me in front of her, and he goes, excuse me, I don't want to, you know, bother you, but are you that guy on Midtown? And I said, yeah. He says, well, you know, I'm a cop, and I tell all, I'm on the Midnight Tour, and I watch it on mobile, you know, on my cell phone when there's downtime, and I tell all the guys in the precinct to watch it. It's the funniest thing. It's just what happens in a patrol car. So then I turn to my girlfriend, and I just right away go into that fake English accent. I'm sorry, baby. This is work for me. I didn't mean this to happen. You know? So she's like rolling her eyes going, oh, my God, you know, another big head, you know, fake kid around, you know. So the cops really love it because it really is what happens in a patrol car. So the reaction's really been very positive from them and from the general public. What I didn't realize is, because, again, I'm just a regular guy, there are some weirdos out there who think, like, TV's, like, real. Like, there was one review going, I can't believe cops act like this. I'm like, I'm not a cop anymore. This is a TV show, lady. You know?
Well, I wanted to bring that up because, like I said, I saw the trailer. And I know you're a police officer. I know you're a very funny guy. But if anybody doesn't know you, just thinks you're an actor, and you're portraying a police officer, you see the portrayal you have, at least in the trailer, your police officer isn't necessarily the brightest bulb. Is that fair to say?
But,
I bring that up only because as a former NYPD officer, I know how tight the brotherhood is. That's why I asked the reaction you get from cops, because, you know, you are one of them. You were one of them. Do they see the humor in it, or do they think you're making fun of them?
You know, they do see the humor in it, at least from what I've seen or heard from them. But, you know, in all honesty, no offense to cops. I mean, a lot of cops aren't the brightest bulb. I mean, a lot of them just, you know, if they weren't cops, there's nothing else they could do in life, some of them. You know what I mean? It's God's honest truth, you know? And, you know, the majority of cops get up every day or take the test and do it because, like myself, I you know, you want to, it's inherent in you to want to help, you know, to want to do the good things. But, you know, there are some cops out there, you stare at them and you're like, what are you thinking? This guy, listen, put away the gun. Tomorrow we're going to start slower. We're going to start with shapes and colors, guy. Okay? Just relax, you know? But most cops get the humor and, you know, have a lot of fun with it because, like in the NYPD, we used to have a saying, you know, you don't have to look for crime. Crime's going to find you. And I think in most of the big cities, that's really kind of like what happens. You know, you don't talk about crime all the time. You know, you talk about miscellaneous things that go on in your life all day. You know, we're soccer coaches, we're dads, we're husbands, we're brothers, we're sons, we're fathers, you know, just like the rest of America is. You know, we're just regular people.
Now, you co-executive produce the show along with the fellow who plays your partner in the show.
Correct. Tom Malloy.
Tom Malloy. And I'm just wondering, having been a police officer, is the relationship with Tom similar to the relationship you had when you had partners in the department?
Yeah, it actually is. He's an East Coast guy. He's a Jersey guy. I'm a Brooklyn guy. And then, you know, so we had that type of humor. We met on a set of a movie and we just kind of clicked with the humor. So, if, again, you know, you can kind of click with a lot of people if people aren't super sensitive. And I think the majority of people are really good that you can kind of click with everybody with that. And the majority of people I find, you know, want to help people anyway. So you start with, I guess if you're a positive person, Peter, you start with what you have and you work from there. You don't start with what you don't have, you know? And Malloy and I just kind of clicked and we have that same kind of humor.
How much of what goes on the show is totally scripted, and how much is you guys riffing ad lib?
Season one was completely ad lib. All we did was take a subject. All right, coffee. You know, you're going to take your stance on where you like to drink coffee, and I'm going to take my stance on where I like to drink coffee, and then just go with it. And you shoot two or three takes, and you see which ones come out the best. Season two, we made the mistake of trying to say, oh, I'll say this, and then you say that. And we started it, and it was like the timing was off. Why don't we just go back to who we are? So we took the subject, we threw the script out, and we just improvised it again. It's just better that way. And they moved up season two, so season two is actually airing now. So it just started to air, so they can actually go on that. And then I'm out here in L.A. now because there are other networks interested in it to move forward. So starting in July, we'll be on some other, like, video-on-demand places like Hulu, and I think the other way is it called Vodo or something like that. I don't know if I'm saying it right. And some other, like, things that are included in your smart TV. I'm not sure it'll be on Netflix or not. That I don't know. I think we're working on that.
Well, let's talk about the success of the show. You did the first season. The second season is coming out now, and you're starting to shoot the third season. First of all, how many episodes are there per season, and are you surprised by the success of the show?
I don't know the exact amount of episodes offhand. I wish I did. I should be better up on that. I guess I'm just, like I tell people, I'm just a cop who just happened to, you know, take this stuff and you know, have fun with it. So I Malloy's more the Hollywood guy. Like this is what he does. You know, like, he's an actor. He's been in great movies and stuff. Am I surprised by the success of the show? And all honesty, I want to sound like a jerk, but no, actually, I'm kind of not, but I kind of am. I'm not, because I always said, even when I was on patrol, I'm like, no one's going to believe this. I got to write this down. And we shot it originally as a real pilot, scripted pilot, and we called it The Fuzz. I had it called Midtown. The people who put the funding behind it wanted to change it to The Fuzz. Okay. You know, you got to go where the check is written. So we did a good pilot, and it was stolen by us, by the people who are now Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Stolen from the advertising to it, from the verbiage of why I did it to my storyline, everything. And we didn't have the money to pursue it. You know, it's like the guy wanted a $10,000 retainer just to start the case. I'm like, I'm just a regular guy. Again, I don't have that kind of money. So, you know, that's life's lesson. It is what it is. But so I told Malloy, let's do like this. Let's see if we can get a grassroots effort. And we were fortunate that it took off. And the first views, I think, when it first hit, we got 430,000 views on YouTube for just like we just put an episode up, like a quick episode. And I think the first two episodes we did were like 430,000 views, I think, each. And that's when Amazon picked it up.
Congratulations. So for those who have not seen the show, I know there's the website, which features the program, but beyond that, where can you find the show?
Right now it is playing on Amazon Prime. So if you typed in Midtown, and then there is a couple of different things that come up when you type in Midtown. So if you typed in Midtown Scott Baker or Midtown Tom Malloy or Midtown the series, then it would pop up on your Amazon feed. At one time for season one, we were in the top recommended shows for their Prime. So that was when season one first came out. And they could see it on Amazon for now.
And in the future, Hulu and beyond, right?
Yeah, starting January, Hulu and beyond, yeah. And the thing we're working out here now, we'll see if it gets picked up by this digital network with Verizon, and it'll really be like almost everywhere.
Congratulations on all your success, Scott. You're a fun guy. You like to have fun, and it's good to see good people succeed in the fun things they like to do. So congratulations on the project.
Well, thank you, and thanks for having me on your show. I got to say, you do some great work. You have great guests, always informative, always upbeat. It's always a pleasure listening to your shows, man. It really is.
Thank you very much, Scott. Have a good day.
You too, Peter. Be well.
Scott Baker, one of the stars and executive producers of Midtown. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0463, and you'll find a link to their site. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
A bank robber who was desperate for cash was fooled into getting himself caught. Police in Ohio said that a quick-thinking bank teller convinced an armed robber to hand over his driver's license. The man entered a Huntington bank in Columbus and gave a note to the teller saying he was armed, demanding money. The woman gave the suspect a stack of cash, but he was not happy. He wanted more. The suspect asked the bank teller to open the teller cash recycler and hand over the money. The bank teller told the suspect that the machine needed a driver's license to dispense cash. The suspect complied and handed over his own driver's license. After the man left, the bank teller called the police and handed over the license. Police arrested 51-year-old David Menser. He was charged with aggravated robbery and threats with a deadly weapon. What an utter maroon. Because why, oh why, would you give the teller you're robbing at gunpoint your driver's license because you think that's the only way you'll be able to get the money you're stealing? One reason, and one reason only, you're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0463. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0463. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder, and don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Before we go, we'd like to leave you with a helpful instructional message from the National Association of People Who Have Trouble Walking and Chewing Gum at the Same Time. Step, chew, step, chew, step, chew, step, step. Oh, God. I always screw it up.